Welcome to the Global Woman Series, a summer of honest conversations with women navigating life between worlds. From grief and reinvention to finding love at 39, these are the real, raw, and wise stories of global women redefining home, identity, and connection. Over the next few weeks, you'll hear from inspiring voices who've lived the questions about belonging, purpose, relationships, and what it really means to choose this life abroad. I'm Amanda Maxime, and this is This Expat Life. I'm so glad that you're here, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, welcome to another episode of This Expat Life. I'm joined in a digital studio by Erica Reitman. And Erica is a branding provocateur, Mexico City fangirl, and co-founder of the Icon Agency. And after 6 years of expat life in Mexico, she briefly detoured to the US, but not for long, as she's moving back to Mexico next month. And she helps rule-breaking entrepreneurs build cult-level brands, adopts elderly basset hounds like it's a competitive sport, and drinks iced coffee exclusively from wine glasses, which I love, by the way, because I see it all the time on Instagram. Think, if Ina Garten got drunk with a Real Housewife and launched a business empire, soon with some Mexican spice on top of it again. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you took my invitation and joined us for this interview. First, let's start here. Where are you calling in from right now?
So right now, I am in our home in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I have been here since February or so of this year. So this is part of my come back to the US, give it a shot, see how you like it. Mm-hmm. Experiment, which failed.
Okay, can we start talking about that right away?
Because,
you know, I've been following you for a long time on Instagram. I started following you when you were living in Mexico City. I loved your daily vlogs as you were walking down the street and the light in your beautiful apartment. Yeah. And then you moved back to the US.
Yes.
It's like, okay, that's interesting too. I think part of your experiment took place on the East Coast as well.
Yes, it did in upstate New York.
Yeah. And then you went back to Los Angeles and now you're going back to Mexico. So can you just take us through that whole journey and that process?
Absolutely. So my husband and I say accidentally moved to Mexico in 2018. And what we were thinking at the time, we were in this gorgeous little town called San Miguel de Allende. And we thought, let's go for 6 months and have just like a fun adventure. And when that's over, we'll come back to our house, we'll come back to our lives, but, you know, we'll have stories for the rest of our lives and it will just be super fun. So that was our game plan when we went to Mexico. And I would say probably just a month or so in, we both looked at each other one day and said, what if we just stay here and don't go back? But that really was not the plan. That really was something that happened after we got there and realized, like, this is pretty fun. This is pretty cool.
So all your like stuff was still in the US and you just went to Mexico with a suitcase.
Yep. We were Airbnb-ing our home. So that worked out really well because we left all our furniture. Like we were just, it was easy for us to do that. We had been Airbnb-ing our little guest house before we left. So we already kind of had experience with that. And then when we were in Mexico, we were Airbnb-ing both our main house and our little guest house. This sounds like, you know, some type of estate situation. It's not. Our house is 750 square feet and our little guest house is like 200 square feet. Yeah. But are like two different structures. So for Airbnb for couples and families, maybe with teenagers who you want to put, you know, in the guest house, it worked really well. So we were in San Miguel de Allende for 3 years or so and absolutely loved it there. My husband opened up an art gallery. My business was thriving. It just was really, really great for us. And then the pandemic hit. And of course, we had to close my husband's art gallery because nobody was coming.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think we just decided we need to mix things up. Let's go to Mexico City. And that is kind of how we ended up there. And we were there for 3 years or so. And it's interesting because when I talk both about the move back to the US and our decision to go back to Mexico, people are very curious and they want to know, what happened? And it feels like they are looking for one specific event that caused our, entire game plan to shift. And for me, this is never how it happens. It's almost never one thing. We are lucky enough to be flexible so that we can work anywhere and live anywhere. So it really was just for me this feeling that our Mexico chapter was over and we wanted to come back to the US. Nothing specifically happened. I didn't all of a sudden decide that I hated being in Mexico. I loved being in Mexico. It just kind of felt like this chapter was over. Let's go back to the US and kind of move on to the next chapter. And I think, honestly, from the time we were back, I started realizing that maybe there was a problem when on my phone, I use Google Photos. And you know how sometimes your phone will serve you memories from like
Yes.
a year ago, 2 years ago?
Exes that you don't want to look at again.
Yes. So anytime it would serve me a memory of our life in Mexico City, of our apartment, I literally would burst into tears. And at first I thought like, okay, this is a big shift. This is a big transition. I tried to explain it away that way. Months later, it was still happening. And it was at that point that I really had to get real with myself and say, I miss it a lot. And this feeling is not going away. So what are we going to do about it? Cut to a year or so later. And of course, my husband and I had discussions about this. And when you make a big decision like this, your brain feels really uncomfortable with the idea of going back on it and doing something that, is the opposite of what you decided to do. It's a very uncomfortable situation for your brain. I know this because I've studied our brains as well. But ultimately, I decided I am not the sort of person who settles in life or in business. And when I really acknowledged and admitted to myself that I don't like it here and I miss it, I just gave myself permission for a do-over. And I think that in life, so often, it feels like a failure if we do something like this. And we don't allow ourselves do-overs because when you make a big decision and you commit to it and you spend thousands of dollars to move all of your stuff from one country to another, it's very easy to say, like, well, I should give this a year, or I really, should put in more effort, or I'm not trying hard enough. And I have just decided that I am going to trust myself, I'm going to trust my instincts, and I'm not settling for anything. And so this is sort of the story of how we
I
decided
love
to
it so
come
much.
back to the US and then return to Mexico.
I love this so much. I think I'm very similar to you. I make decisions also on an intuitive hit when I feel like there's a new chapter starting for me somewhere else. People always tell me, "Oh, but I thought you wanted, I thought you liked, I thought you said." I'm like, "Yeah, I said all those things, but now I've changed and now I want something else." And for me, I spent a lot of time in Latin America. And last year I went to Rio for 6 months and I realized, okay, my chapter in Latin America after 15 years is done. I'm ready for something new. And it's not like I hated the continent, far from it. I'll still go back to it. But it's like I have a feeling like, okay, something new is unfolding for me and I'm ready for it. However, many people, especially the expats that I coach, aren't like this, and they want to have also this rational justification for their decisions. What are some qualities maybe that helped you build that self-trust and to say, okay, I don't settle and I'm just going to follow what I think feels right for me right now?
I mean, honestly, a lot of doing the opposite. And I think really for me, I think if you're of a certain age, and I'm 52 now, so I'm Gen X and grew up in a very, very different world than we have now. I think our generation is so interesting because we spent half of our lives without the internet and cell phones and all of that. And now we're deeply in there. But I really was taught and grew up and practiced sticking with something and making a commitment and honoring the commitment. And there are many parts of my life where I still do that. I mean, if I make a commitment to my client, Unless I'm in the hospital, there is just no way I am not going to be following through. But I think what I realized for myself is that at a certain point, and again, I did really study how our brains work, and I really learned about mindset work. And one of my catchphrases is your brain is a dick, which
Yeah, I know. I love
my
that.
audience loves to repeat back to me, which makes me so happy because, use it in your own life, steal it
Yeah.
as your own. But I really learned about how our brains work and how it really feels like its main job is to protect ourselves.
Yeah.
And back in the day, that used to mean like, don't leave the cave. There are dinosaurs out there who might eat you. Obviously, the world is very different today. And so often, the way this manifests itself is our brains want us to continue doing whatever we've been doing. Even if we have the feeling that I don't like this or I'm ready for something new, it's what your brain is used to. And that is always going to be its like comfortable default. And once I learned that, and I really understood that I am in charge here. Sure, my brain is going to have ideas. My brain is going to push back on me. But now that I understand how it works, I'm taking the wheel here. I'm making the decision. And when I started doing that and seeing kind of, the effect, the ripple effect on other areas of my life, I was blown away. And I realized that I had spent so much of my life waiting for things to happen and then responding to them rather than deciding,
Yeah.
this is what's next. This is what I'm going to do. I know you're uncomfortable right now, dick brain, but you're coming along with me and
Yeah.
we're going to make this work. And so the power of that for me was life-changing. And I think the more I did it, because by the way, if you are interested in this whole, idea of wrangling your brain and figuring out how it works, it requires so much practice. It's almost like you're training for an Olympic sport. And just like those high-level athletes, you're never going to be done. You're never going to reach a point where you're like, well, okay, I've trained enough. I've trained enough for, whatever Olympic sport you're participating in. It just never happens. And it's the same thing with your brain. You always have to practice. Still to this day, I will
Yeah.
have moments where I'm like, wait a second, what are you doing here? You're spiraling, you're staying stuck, you're letting your dig brain take over. So it is something that really does require a lot of practice. And, again, even that was something that I realized because once I was studying mindset and really kind of, for the first time in my life, using my brain in what felt like a really powerful way, I remember having this thought of like, okay, I'm done now. All my problems are solved. I understand how this works. And of course, very quickly, I realized,
It's a
no.
never-ending onion that you peel off every time,
Yes.
another layer.
Yes. And it felt like, for a moment, it felt like, oh, I've reached the top of the mountain. And then I realized I'm literally never going to stop climbing this mountain. However, I now have an iPad with me. I brought a charcuterie board along. I'm watching a Netflix show. It's just much more fun to climb the mountain than it was in during many other times of my life.
Oh, I love that metaphor. You start because you're basically rewiring your brain to think,
Absolutely.
to empower it more, to think better. Did you start doing that before you moved to Mexico the first time, or was it around that move as well?
It was around that time. So it all kind of, it was around that same time. And again, I think that while I was there was the time that I was really putting this into practice. And I think being an expat just in and of itself is pushing yourself and your brain in a way that most people are not familiar with or comfortable with. And I think that's part of the reason that people are so obsessed with this idea of understanding my decision and what is responsible for my decision. Because I think for most people, that's how they operate in the world. Most people don't just wake up one day and think, ooh, let's move to Mexico and and make it happen. And I think they wish they did, and that they were the type of person that would do that. And they're very much not. So I have found that it's really interesting that people are so curious about the decision-making process. And even beyond that, I'm still getting questions like, well, are you going to come back again? Like, how long are you going to be there? What's going to happen
Knows.
in 5 years? I don't
Yeah.
know. I have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, this so resonates with me because I also feel like some others don't understand my decisions. And when I saw your email announcing that you were moving back to Mexico, I was like, yes, there's someone who is going through the same thing.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's really courageous also to come back on your decision in a way to redo it.
Yeah.
Because that can feel scary too, not because of what others think, but because you into that place, the newness is gone. I know what I can expect. Maybe it's going to be less exciting this time. So, how is that for you now?
I mean, I think just because we came back to the States and it really just was not a fit. It wasn't what I thought it would be. It didn't feel like I thought it would be. I didn't like who I was here as much as I liked who I was in Mexico. So I am over the moon excited. I will say too, I think a piece of it for me was we did move to upstate New York and that really was not a fit for us. It is absolutely beautiful. I wish I was the type of person that loved living in upstate New York and wanted to buy a farm and just kind of hang out there. And I just realized that I'm not. So coming back to our home in LA, I think really cemented things for me because I love our house here. I love being here. I love Los Angeles. I know this city. I know my way around. I know my favorite thrift stores. I know my favorite supermarkets. I know my favorite Marshalls. Like, I've got it down. And I didn't even like being here. So at that point, I was able to say to myself, like, okay, I understand what it's like to live in Los Angeles, and I understand what it's like to live in Mexico City now. I understand the nuance and the daily life and all of that. And I don't like it as much here. And I even push myself to think through, like, what are the things that you don't really love about LA? And I mean, for me, some of them are you have to drive everywhere. I don't love driving. Everything is so beyond crazy expensive that it's almost laughable. Like, my husband and I will order something on Uber Eats, lunch, and it's not like we're getting an appetizer, an entree, and a dessert, and it's $90, like for two sandwiches and a lemonade. So I started going through my list and realizing that the things I don't love about being here, I can't change. There's nothing I can do about the fact that you need to drive everywhere or the fact that it's so ridiculously expensive. And when I was thinking about the things that I don't necessarily love about being in Mexico City, I mean, honestly, for me, the number one thing is that I am not yet comfortable enough speaking Spanish. So this results sometimes in some, anxiety producing or uncomfortable situations. But when I think about that thing, it's completely in my control. I can
Oh,
fix
yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So when I force myself to get that specific about things and realize that, look, of course, there are still certain things that are a little challenging about being in Mexico that I can't control.
The
But when
noise.
the noise, however, this time around, we found an apartment on a real quiet street.
Oh,
So
nice.
I'm excited to see if that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think that can sometimes be helpful too, to for people to go through that exercise and realize, okay, there's a list of five things I don't love about being where I am right now, and I don't have control over any of them.
Yeah.
I mean, just to give you an example of something you might have control over is like one of the things that's a little hard for us in LA is we do have friends here, but again, because you have to drive everywhere, and because, quite frankly, my husband and I don't have kids, and a lot of our friends do. It like puts you into a little bit of a different realm.
Yeah.
And we don't, we were feeling like we weren't really seeing our friends as much
Yeah.
as we thought we were. Now, again, that is something that would be within our control. There are things that we could do to like fix that or improve that. So I really think forcing yourself to get like laser specific about what you like and don't like, and then asking yourself, like, am I saying give this place another year? But in reality, all the things I don't like about it aren't going to change in a year.
Yes.
So why am I giving it a year? And why, by the way, this is interesting too. What's a year? Somebody at some point made up that arbitrary time frame, and now we're all bought into it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so in some countries it does make sense a year because you get the four seasons.
True.
So you get a real, rounded view
Yeah.
of the place there.
That's true.
I like what the list because a lot of people make pros and cons lists, and I'm always like, toss them out of the window because, that's just tapping into your rational brain. But I do
Yeah.
like the fact that the added thing that you put on top of it, like what is in your control and what isn't, because that gets you real specific about what you can change or not. So you can also know from a year from now, is it going to be the same?
Yeah.
You mentioned that you didn't like who you were in the US. Can you make that a little bit more specific? How did you notice that within yourself?
I mean, again, I wish it was just like one or two things that I could share with you, but it just was this overall feeling. I mean, I will be honest and share that I am someone who has struggled with depression since I was in my early 20s. And so that's always something that's there. And it's for me, I control it with medication, and it has been a very long time since it has like interfered with my daily life in terms of me being so depressed that it was hard to show up for work or life. However, I do notice in myself that I will go through phases where my depression feels more front and center for me. And that was absolutely happening when we moved to upstate New York. And the thing about depression is sometimes it just shows up for absolutely no reason, and you can't really say, like, well, this thing happened and then that happened. And, it kind of can make sense to your brain. So I think I was trying to just lean into that a little bit and think, like, oh, maybe this is coincidental. Maybe this is unrelated to what's going on. But I just had this daily feeling of, I don't feel like myself as much. I don't love the person that I am and how I'm showing up to my life and how I'm showing up to my business and how I'm showing up to my marriage and my relationships. And I just was not in love with the person that I seemed to be becoming when we were back here. And again, this is not something that was comfortable for my brain. Like, it's the sort of thing that like you want to push against, you want to make up excuses for, you want to explain away and force yourself to give it time and remind yourself that you made this decision for a reason in the first place. And you need to give it more time, and you don't make decisions out of the clear blue like that. So there must have been a reason for it. And I just reached a point where I was like, no. This isn't working. Like it almost got to a point where I was like, there's too much explaining away. There's too much trying to come up with all sorts of excuses here. You're not being real with yourself. Get real and admit what's really going on. Again, this did not happen on day one, the first time I cried at my, Google photo. But I did reach a point where I was like, this is what's happening right now, and I want a do-over. I want to go back.
Oh, this resonates so much. I live in The Hague, which is a very small coastal town in the Netherlands, and I'm surrounded by kids in my neighborhood. I'm in front of a primary school with screaming kids all day. And I realized the other day, whenever it doesn't matter when I go outside, I always see kids and parents around me. And I'm in my ambition era. And so I would love to see people in suits with coffees to go, on their way to work, wearing heels, wearing beautiful clothes. I do not see that. And you bring yourself wherever you go. Like it's a lot of people make the mistake, so if I just move abroad, all my problems will disappear. That's not the case, but also your environment really impacts how you are feeling and being and what you're doing and the inspiration that you get and the energy you get from it. A lot of people And I was part of it too. You know, I had this too a couple of years ago. We're like, okay, I just need to try a little harder, or I should be grateful for what I have. A lot of
Yeah.
people dream of living in The Hague. I have American friends who say like The Hague is the best thing that happened to me because there's work-life balance here and nature. And often the needing to feel grateful and needing to try a little harder is stopping them from making a decision. And it's simply about deciding, I don't want to settle for this.
Yeah.
And I'm allowing myself permission to choose something else. So,
Right.
yeah, I think it's so inspiring that you are doing this. It's very cool.
Thank you.
Maybe we can actually talk a little bit about the environment aspect because I've seen your apartments in LA and in Mexico City. You were an interior designer, right? Or still are, maybe,
Yes.
sure.
Yes, I was in my former life an interior designer. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you maybe share something about how you always decorate your spaces so that it really enables the best of you to come out?
Yeah. I mean, so this was a big thing for me, particularly as an expat, because I was noticing the other ways that people expat. And so what I mean by that is, particularly in Mexico, like in San Miguel, which is kind of where we started out, Americans come, they rent a place that's already furnished, and they live there. And I say this with much love, but what I realized is that my level of taste and my level of, what I like to have in my home and around me is not usually a match for those types of places. And because I know this about myself, and because I know that if I am in an environment, and by the way, this year has proved it to me, because when, even though we were in like a beautiful space in upstate New York, I was in a place that didn't feel inspiring to me, that didn't light me up every time I walked into it or thought about it. And I know for me, and not everybody is like this, but I know for me, there is a direct correlation between that and my happiness, my success, my ability to make money, my ability to get focused, my ability to come up with new ideas. It's just directly related. And so what I realized is that the way everyone else was expatting was not the way that was going to work for me. And people thought I was crazy because basically we moved to a foreign country and decided to rent an unfurnished place that, number one, we needed to spend the money on buying all the stuff, putting it together. And then the thought is, well, if you are ever coming back to the States, like, that's a waste. What are you going to do with all that? Sure, sell it, but you're never going to make as much money as what you need. And I now have the ability to say it doesn't matter because I know that during my time there, it's going to make all the difference in my daily life, in my enjoyment. And maybe we'll move back to the States one day, or maybe we won't. I am not going to make my decision. I find that this happens so often with people, like when they're selling a house or they've bought a house and they think, like, I want to do this thing, but I'm not going to do it because it's going to affect our resale value. They might not be ever selling their house, or when they sell their house, it might be 20 years down the line. So the fact that I decided to put a tub in my bathroom when I really just want a shower, and I am not a bath person. For 20 years, I am going to live with that stupid tub that I don't there because I'm thinking about maybe one day I'll sell it, and the person who wants to buy it is going to want a tub there, and they're then going to think, well, forget the whole thing now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, so I really realized that. Yes, there are rules and examples for me of the way other people have done this expat thing. I'm going to go my own way. And so I kind of invented this concept called merch my life, which basically means, and I really leaned into this when we moved to Mexico City, that I don't want to bring anything into my space that doesn't feel beautiful or inspiring or just make me happy. Now, most people will immediately think like furniture, art. And yes, that is what I mean. But I got so granular about this. I even was looking at the sponges that I had in my kitchen. I don't know why. This is
Wow.
maybe an American thing, but most sponges here are like orange or fluorescent
Yeah.
purple. Like they're such ugly colors that don't go with the rest of my decor. And again, this sounds so silly and stupid, but if you take a look around your house, you're going to realize there are so many things like that that you have just never questioned and bring into your space and accept that this is the way these things look without trying to find something that's a better match for you. And again, I know sponges sounds ridiculous, but I just want to bring that up because that is really the level of, granularness that I was bringing to this whole thing because I know how important this is for me. And
Yeah.
when I go over to my sink and I see like a neutral or a black sponge, it just makes me happy.
I need to get a black sponge too. I've got a black
You
kitchen with
do.
everything is black, so it looks really
Yes.
amazing, by the way. But
You can
yeah,
find them on Amazon.
I didn't know about them. Okay, cool. So, I'm not super creative. I like living in a nice house, apartment, but I don't have that good of an eye for those details. So, what practical tips would you have for expats who are a bit like me, who also want to, bring their own vibes to the house? Maybe they cannot bring all their own furniture or buy everything new. What are some practical tips? Where can they get started?
I mean, I think too, again, this is just how our brains work. Like maybe you rent a space like that and you just think, well, okay, I'm stuck with all of this stuff. And that is true to some degree, but you could walk around your space, take all the art off the wall and put it in the closet and replace it with things that you love or that you start collecting at the flea market or on different trips that you're taking. And it's not that hard to do things like that. Now, sure, if you hate all the furniture in your space, this is going to be kind of a harder task, but maybe you just don't love the dining room chairs. And if you have a basement or you have an empty room that you're not really using, you can start to take pieces in your space and just put them to the side. And then when you leave, you can kind of bring them back. I mean, I even would go to the length of, you could replace the handles on the cabinets in your kitchen. Just put them in a drawer. You could change a light fixture. Everyone has like different things that kind of bring them joy and make them happy. And I just would say, like, lean into whatever that is for you. And give yourself permission to switch some things up and just put all the stuff that belongs to the person who owns the place in one spot. Take pictures if you need to remember where the stuff goes.
Good
And you
one.
can put it back when and if you leave.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, cool. So I can't wait to look at your new apartment on the quiet street in Mexico City. You said in the US you weren't enjoying or liking who you were. Who is the Erica in Mexico City?
Erica in Mexico City is just braver and more interesting and more curious and is willing to push herself in ways that I just am not in the US. And I don't know if it's a matter of just being comfortable here and kind of understanding how things work. Perhaps that's a piece of it. But I just found that in Mexico City, I was the sort of person that, like, I would want to meet at a party, that just felt more interesting and felt more vibrant and alive. And curious is really the word that keeps coming to my mind. So I'm excited to
Yeah, to
spend
go
some
back
time with
to
her
yeah.
again. Yes.
Can we also talk about the iced coffee and wine glasses? Because
Yes.
what I mean, and was it part of like the creativity you add to your daily life or the Erica you wanted to be? Like what made you do?
Yes. I mean, a big part of the mindset work that I did and that I now do with my clients is getting comfortable with future you. And what I mean by that is if you could today create this version of yourself that is living your dream life from start to finish, your job, where you are, the amount of money that you're making, whether you have a partner or not, like all of those things. I am constantly asking myself how, and I sometimes use this term CEO millionaire me, because that's like a very easy way for me to just immediately connect with that version of myself. I say, how would CEO millionaire me show up to her workday? What would that look like? And when you go through that exercise, sure, there are certain things like if you say, well, I would have four assistants and I would have a live-in chef, and you can come up with all of those like pie in the sky things. By the way, I would still suggest you do that because what I often find and what my clients find is those things are closer than you might think. Like, sure, you can't necessarily hire a full-time chef. Could you once a week hire somebody to come for a couple of hours and make dinners for you for the whole week? Maybe. So even thinking those things through, I think are really great. But it's just thinking about how I would be showing up to my life and how I would want to honor this version of myself in a way that felt real. And for me, the funny thing is, I don't even drink. I don't drink wine. But my collection of wine glasses is banging because every drink that I do have is in a wine glass. It's silly. There is something about it that feels bougie and special. Like I am showing up as the CEO millionaire version of me. And then I am worth the effort of making a beautiful drink for myself and putting fresh herbs in the glass and taking the time to make it feel special for me. It just feels really friggin' good.
Wow, I love it. And I also do a lot of the future self, future you stuff, which is so cool. And I think the way that you do it also really keeps you connected to yourself in an environment that keeps changing or demands you to adjust as also as an expat, because you're all the time in different countries, US, Mexico, and that is something that you can do wherever you go, and that is really you. You change
Absolutely.
it. Yeah, I love that. Okay, is there anything else that you do that you are starting like a new habit from the CEO millionaire you?
I mean, I really, it's to the point where in the beginning, I really had to like force myself to think about it. I think I've taught my brain that this is now our default. So I really try, I think. Look, goals are amazing, having specific ideas of what you want to do and where you want to get to in life. But I sometimes find too that thinking things through from the point of view of not necessarily like I want to make a certain amount of money every year, but I want my life to be like this. Like, for example, when I started my business, and my husband and I do really love to travel, we try and travel as much as we possibly can. The first time I experienced flying first class, I quickly realized I don't know how I'm ever going to go back to this other way of traveling. And I realize that makes me sound like a bougie bitch, but I'm willing to own that. And I realize like I want to get to a point in my life where traveling first class is not like a pro con list and a discussion with my husband, and a should we spend money on this and not spend money on that? And can we make it work? Like, I wanted to get to a point where that wasn't happening. And I decided at some point in my business that I was there. I didn't have in my mind, like, in order to do that, you need X amount of dollars in your bank account, you need this amount of clients, you need this amount in your 401k. I made the decision that we are there and this is what's going to happen now. And from that point, we have traveled first class. And it just has brought so much happiness to my life in an area of my life. And again, most people, are not necessarily traveling this much. or would rather spend their money on other things, you know? And I think it's really important to tune into what matters for you. Just
Yeah.
like the apartment and furniture and stuff like that, a lot of people feel like that's not worth it for me
Yeah.
to spend money on, spend time on, spend energy on. And that's totally okay too. But as someone who absolutely loves to travel and realized like how much nicer flying first class makes that
Yeah.
for both me and my husband, it's worth it for us. And
Yeah.
so I just think too, like when you're getting in touch with this future self, think about some of those things that aren't necessarily like very specific. I want to get here. I want to be making this amount of money. I want to be like XYZ, whatever it is for you. And think about some of those like lifestyle-y type
Yeah.
things just would really make such an incredible difference in your life and work toward that.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. So, there's one final question that I always ask my guests on the show, and actually I didn't prep you for this, so you have to do it on the spot. And
Okay.
I'm also going to challenge you to give some another answer than the tip you just gave. But
Okay.
what is your number one hack to make living abroad easier, better, or more fun?
My number one hack for living abroad to make it more fun. I mean, this is probably going to be a controversial one because I constantly see people in expat groups and other spots talking about how when they move to another country, they don't want to be around expats. They want to be living the life and in their, you know, part of the neighborhood where there are no expats
Yeah.
around. And yes, I am sounding a little judgy about that, truly. Like, you should have your experience in whatever way you want to. I have met the most incredible people everywhere we've gone by intentionally connecting with other expats. Because I find that I don't even need to know anything else about you. If I know that you are an expat, you're immediately like plus 10, plus 20 points
Yeah.
before we even say hi or have a conversation or I learn anything about you. You are the type of person that takes big chances and wants to live a big life and
Yeah.
is willing to do things in a different way than most other people do.
Yeah.
And so I specifically will seek out other expats and connect with other expats and make friends with other expats. And it has made all the difference for me personally in my time abroad. Now, does that mean, you know, I'm doing this just so that I can be speaking English all the time and I'm not going to be spending time learning Spanish? Like, you know, again, think whatever you want of that. It is something that I will say does bring me comfort in a way that if you've never experienced being in a country and not understanding the language and what that feels like in your brain, the isolation that comes along with it. And again, this is something that you can change, but you realize that you are alone so much because you're just not fully understanding what
Yeah.
is going on around you. And the first time we came back to the States and we're in a restaurant and I just could understand everything that was happening, that really just came to light. So again, for me, it is meeting incredible people, sometimes giving myself that comfort of being around people that I can easily communicate with. And I just, again, I have loved specifically finding other expats wherever we go. And that has really been a big part of what has made our time abroad so special. We have made, you know, we're in a couple of weeks, we're going to London with two of our best friends who we met in San Miguel de Allende. They're a couple from Los Angeles that we never probably would have met if we stayed here in Los Angeles. And now we take trips together and, you know, we spend time together. And it's just been the most meaningful thing. So I say spend time learning the language, absolutely immerse yourself in the culture, make friends with people who are native to wherever it is that you're going. But it's okay to also connect with other expats too.
Yes, amen. Thank you for saying that. I wholeheartedly agree. And it's not about the nationality or language only. It's also about this mindset and this approach to life that you cannot always find. You also cannot find them with the locals in your home country. Right? Yeah. Also, now I'm back here in the Netherlands. I still connect to international people here. So, yeah, I totally get that. Well, Erica, thank you so much for being on the show. I honestly loved having you here. I can't wait to see your new adventures in Mexico City.
Thank
I'll
you.
probably be going there myself as well in December. That's the plan for now.
Ooh,
Yeah.
well, we'll have to get coffee and hang out.
In a wine glass, please. Yes.
Yes.
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your fun little things that you added. It's a very vibrant energy that I get from you, and it's very inspiring.
Oh, thank you. I really had a blast, and I'm happy to talk about this expat stuff anytime. So it really was fun for me too.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Global Woman series on This Expat Life. If this conversation moved you, made you think, or made you feel a little less alone, share it with someone who needs to hear it too, so that we can grow our community of self-led expats across the globe. And make sure to subscribe as we have new episodes coming out every week. Until next time, wherever you are in the world.